operators and those involved in the hydrogen mobility value chain. So first up is, forgive the pronunciation because this is probably not going to be very good, Swapnil Sawant from Tbilisi Motors. Sorry about that.
Okay, so Tbilisi was established back in 2023 at the campus of Coventry University with myself and two other co-founders. And so we started as a team of three people. And since then, we have done very good collaborations and MOUs, and we'll be talking about it. So firstly, our focus area is mainly on the software-defined vehicles. And this is something new to everyone, maybe, an aftermarket plug-and-play hydrogen range extender as a kit. So you all might have not heard about it before, but today I will tell you the story how we came across this. So firstly, the story behind the software-defined hydrogen vehicles. So next to me is the CEO of Soda Auto. So they develop hydrogen software-defined vehicles as a kit. So we came across last year. Jointly develop world's first software-defined hydrogen vehicle together, focusing on the fleet market and a logistic market, targeting the light commercial transportation. And why we came across this, because to give the best out of our products to our fleet companies across the globe and give the best value proposition for them. But before going towards to hydrogen as a complete fuel cell electric vehicles, because there are already fleet companies who have already bought electric vehicles. And when we had discussion with the fleet companies over the expos and different fleet, we reached out to fleet owners already, they have already bought this battery electric vehicles, but they were not at all happy with their range of the vehicle and also the charging time when it comes to commercial transportation. So we are switching back to petrol and diesel, we are done with battery electric vehicles. But then no, wait, we can offer you something very unique. What if we offer you a range extender as a kit on the roof of your vehicles, and at the cost of $20,000 dollars per unit, you can get another 200 to around 200 miles of range, additional range having on your vehicle. So they were okay, we are very happy if we can help them with the trial for 3 months or 6 months. And that's where the story started of developing the world's first aftermarket plug and play hydrogen range extender kit. So this range extender kit is under development now. And we are expecting them to be in market in next 3 to 4 months for as a first demonstrator in the market. And we already procured customers from France and UK and also from India for this. Okay. Now talking about our strategic partner. Yes, I'm as an early stage startup and Yes, I might sound you all very optimistic about how we can achieve this, but that's just because of our strategic partner, Horizon Fuel Cell Technologies. So they are helping us to develop our fuel cell electric vehicles as well as the range extender kit at a very seamless way, and also able to achieve us as per our needs and able to adapt to our vehicles very well. So this collaboration came through my CTO, who has already worked for Horizon Motors and very closely with Horizon, and this fuel cell system was customized by himself only. And when he joined me, that was a game changing for me, and that's where Tbilisi Motors is going to be one of the leading startups and emerging startups in fuel cell electric vehicles coming towards by end of this year. And we are expecting our first launch of fuel cell electric vehicles by 2028. That is going to be a soft launch of starting with a small amount of small volume of fuel cell electric vehicles. So the challenges we are facing is the cost of the vehicles and the infrastructure costs. So just because of the cost from the fuel cell electric vehicle of our, from our partner Horizon Fuel Cell Technology, we are able to achieve a cost within the price range of diesel and petrol vehicles. We are expecting them and the biggest challenge is the limited refueling stations across the across the world, not only in UK. So whenever I reach out to any customers potential customers and fleet owners, if they are ready to buy a range extender kit or a fuel cell electric vehicle in future, their first question is, okay, we are okay, but where can we refuel this fuel? Where can we get the hydrogen? This is always the first question they have in the mind. And we are looking to collaborate with any hydrogen infrastructure partner to achieve this. And like fleet companies, they are not well educated about this hydrogen as a fuel, because they feel like hydrogen is not a safe option for them. Whenever they think about hydrogen, the first thing after the availability is like how safe the hydrogen is. So, but we as a team, we believe like a hydrogen is way safer compared to a battery electric vehicle based on the like safety features and how the vehicle has been developed. We believe hydrogen is way safer compared to battery electric vehicles. So that's all from me today. Yeah, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. And you all can reach out on my email, and that's our website. We are based in London, but my team, like we started as a 3 people, but now we have a team of 20 people across UK, Europe, North America, and also in India. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Andrew Hagen from Element 2, talking about speeding up the hydrogen market.
Thanks, Diana, and it's the focus on the UK, but what Diana and Ian are doing over in Ireland is fantastic, and we need to work with them to speed it up there as well. I live in Dublin, by the way, and be flying back there later, but yes, definitely need to get that going. We've got a lot of slides to get through. That's why it's called Speeding Up the Hydrogen Market, because I'll be going I'm not going to talk to all the slides. I'm obliged to tell you a bit about Element 2 and who we are, which is necessary, but most in the room know who we are. And I look around, it's all familiar faces. As Amanda said earlier, it's sort of preaching to the choir. So what are the interesting messages that I can bring across today? Well, first, it's responding to some of the things that were said before. So Chloe mentioned safety. That for us is paramount, and we all need to keep that in mind. Safety, safety, safety comes first and foremost for us. We have very, very few, almost zero safety incidents. And when we do, it's very well logged, and we make sure they will never happen again. So it's safety first. Amanda said about the speed, and she talked about the tankers. Well, we can outrun those imperial vessels. We have done the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs. We're that quick. I mean, we're very adaptable, if anyone gets that reference. But again, in Ireland, the Star Wars analogy is quite appropriate. She talked about RCVs. I mean, we've been doing the RCVs in St. Helens, close to here. We've been doing that for some time. We're not doing it anymore. We even helped our partners there where they couldn't fill up the hydrogen buses for the Labour Party conference last year. We stepped in, we got the buses going. We're happy to do RCVs, collect up the mess and clean up the mess of others and collaborate with them to make sure the hydrogen market gets up and running. And we want to do that. We want to collaborate with everyone. Anyone who's in the room, there's no competitors for us right now. We have to work together to get this market up and running. That's the only way it's going to take off quickly. What we're not going to do, we have a lot of sites, we have a lot of options, we have planning permission for a lot of them, we have development of some of them, and Tees Valley, big up to Mark there, who's not paying attention, but Tees Valley will be our first permanent site. Someone talked about mobile sites and mobile solutions. I think it was you, Mark, as well. We will not call them mobile. People think we can rock up with a tube trailer, MEGC, and suddenly fill up and rock off. No. We call them at best temporary. And the problem with them is you do not give a good experience. If you want to convert to hydrogen, you have to do a great experience from the outset, or else you've lost your customer for years. So many people have found that that's why Volvo are delaying the release of their trucks until 2028. They have them, they think they're ready, but they're not going to do it till 2028 until they're 100% perfect and they're confident. They've made that mistake before in the markets with other fuels. They're not going to do it again. They want it right from the outset. We will not build monuments to hydrogen. We need to know the market is there. We are the chicken, and we'd like the eggs of Stellantis, of Elemco, of VC, who were just on before. We want to make sure that they are there before we're going to put concrete and steel in the ground. We will do a sort of temporary solution in between to test the markets there, but we're not going to put the permanent site in until we know there is a full market. And that's what we did at Tees Valley, as we'll see. We did the first round of refueling there on our own. We were so successful, we did the second round, one of three successful applicants. And it's been great working with Mark and the combined authority. I mean, they really know what they want. I said, we're going to whiz through these slides, such as the disclaimer. I mean, I'd love to read it out to you, but there's not much interesting for you in there. One of our big advantages, we have a very, very experienced senior management team at Element 2. I mean, Harvey has just joined us as our CFO. His experience at GXO, Clipper Logistics, that adds that logistics element to Element 2 that we were missing before. In distribution terms and logistics, that's a massive asset for us. Brendan, he's been running fuel cell companies for the last 25 years. He knows everything about hydrogen fuel cells and hydrogen. Myself, I'm not very clever. I did 7 years studying chemistry, still stuck in the first element, hydrogen. So, aside from that, I did work at places like Air Liquide, Shell, World Economic Forum, but and then I think some of you recognize our chair, Sir Vince, business secretary, former leader of the Lib Dems. He also chairs our advisory board, of which the cream of that is now one of my former colleagues and mentors who started hydrogen at Shell, the former CEO of Shell, Jeroen van der Veer. So again, huge experience there, but not just in the management team, but our practical experience. So what do? We're building that backbone for hydrogen supply. We're doing retail infrastructure, industrials, power to liquid, off-grid, transport demand. I'm not going to dwell on it. I mean, you know who we are. We can deliver hydrogen to anyone in the UK, Ireland, and increasingly so Europe. And it's not just for refueling. We have that expertise, but we can deliver for any needs of hydrogen to get the market up and running. So that's fleets, airports, ports, and local government. Yeah, it's that UK-wide infrastructure that we're doing, buying and retailing locally sourced hydrogen where we can. We're pragmatic. We'll take whatever hydrogen is there to get the market up and running, and then we'll plot a path to the most environmentally friendly possible and economic. We want it first and foremost up and running and safe. Then we'll start looking at how you improve that. I have my four R's. We want the right source of hydrogen in the right place with the right technology for the right application. And we've done over 1,500 refueling operations. We lost count at that point a couple of years ago, so we've done a lot more than that by now. But we have that experience, we've seen the problems, we've had the teething issues, we've got through it. Our growth has been massive, six growth, the revenue over the last 2 years, over 1,500 refueling operations, hydrogen trading and sales, transport, industrial supply, we do it all. Retail station development, you know, again, not gonna talk an element too. But Tees Valley is a great case in point. Mark's there again. This will be our first permanent station. There we do have the vehicles. Again, thanks to Brad, he's going to be supplying vehicles for that, among others. We have a backup solution as well. You were requesting that you don't have one in one area. So one of our others, it will be Coneygarth, just down the road. We have that reliability. And reliability is huge for us. We have a range of supply sources. We have never let down a customer. When we say we're going to deliver, we have always delivered. So 100% of the time, we never let anyone down. We're doing the grid deblending. That's going to speed up the market. Moving hydrogen around through the pipes is going to be a lot easier than MEGCs and tube trailers. That's not going to be tomorrow, but we're working with that at Spade Adam, with High NTS, with National Gas. We did the first round of testing, and we did the second. We're doing the second round right now. Yeah, we've got over 70 years of combined senior management experience. We've secured desirable sites. Again, if you know where you want your markets, come and talk to us. We're happy to deliver if we know the market's there. We've got a broad base of supply, both of technology. We're technology agnostic. We're not going to develop ourselves. We're going to see what's proven off the shelves and the best and implement that. And we have the multiple gas suppliers. We will never let a partner down. Big customer pipeline, gas transport systems, mobile refueling, which I hate. It's temporary refueling solutions. And then our refueling stations, where it's an artist's impression, it's an architect's impression. That's what they will look like, not what they do look like. And here's one of our containers saying, make diesel history. And that's why I said at the beginning, we embrace battery electric as well. Anything that will address climate change, we are happy to support, and especially where it needs hydrogen as the backup supply anyway. So it's an advantage to our market. So make diesel history is our strap line, not make diesel history through hydrogen. In summary, what you need to know is Element 2 are great, pretty much that's it. And yeah, we're experienced, we're safe and reliable, we have sites, some in development, and we will deliver to anyone and anyone who needs hydrogen. We're open to business, so come to us if you need hydrogen supply. And if you've got money, come and invest in us. And I see someone who's just walked in at the right moment for that, so thank you. But now, more seriously, it's the year zero. If we wait 5 years, the year zero is in 5 years. We need to get this market going now. We've already done over 1,500 operations, all safely, safety first, and we want the most environmentally friendly source of hydrogen. But we need to get going now, or we just delay when year zero is. There's a huge opportunity. We're all about energy security and net zero, and the need to use hydrogen where it's needed, as we'll show later on. Why are we all here? It's not for the economics, it's not the engineering, it's not because hydrogen's a wonderful gas and molecule, which it is, but climate change is both exponential and existential. That's why we're doing it. We're not doing it for any other reason. This is an existential question. We've already exceeded the Paris limit of 1.5 degrees. 2 weeks ago, it was colder in New Orleans than it was in Davos, Switzerland. That's not normal. Celebrities' homes have been burnt down in California. I mean, amazing, God forbid that celebrities' homes are being burnt down. Ireland, where I live, had possibly its most severe storm in recorded history. Again, it's not normal. These norms are changing. That's climate change. It's exponential in its growth. They're just getting stronger. So how do we speed up the hydrogen economy? What are the measures we can take? Yes, there are markets, sustainable aviation, the SAF mandate is coming in. There's the off-road and the backup power on the set. The grid capacity is not up to it for electric. Even when electric's the best solution, we will need hydrogen for those backup solutions as well. And the grid deblending, we talked about that already. So I'm not going to go into that. So the opportunity is huge. There's 500,000 diesel HGVs in the road in the UK, 450,000 LCVs and vans. So we want to do that to help increase UK energy security, decarbonize transport, help an affordable and just transition, enable growth in jobs and economy, and utilize the huge wind and solar potential of the UK. It's not hydrogen versus electric. It's both. Different horses for different courses. We recognize that. We will support both. We want to put hydrogen where it's needed, not where it's not needed. We want battery electric where it is needed. As Brad said, if you can charge a vehicle overnight, probably battery electric's the best solution for you. What do we need for that? Supply, vehicles, network, customers. At the moment, it's not going to be till 2028. But we need to speed up that market for all of those. I'm not going to talk about the economic value to the UK. But somehow our slides aren't coming up there. There we go. You've already seen the slide for Europe. That's the 700 bar and the 350 bar. Versus the UK, Amanda showed you that earlier as well, so I'm not going to go into it. But that's what we are addressing as Element 2. We have the sites, we're ready to build out, we'll be developing and building this year and some. We have options and others. Come to us if you have the supply of the vehicles or the need for hydrogen so we know where to build them out. Is it a chicken versus egg question? Well, again, if Brad's our egg, then we are the chicken. Chickens, by the way, the egg has a protein that can only be produced in the chicken, as a scientific nerd. So the chicken actually had to come first. We are see ourselves, Element 2, as a chicken that clones itself through the medium of an egg. But how do we crack it? 50 in 5. That's one of our big mantras now. We're going to build 50 stations in 5 years throughout the UK and Ireland. Not 50 pumps, Brad, as we were talking earlier. there was confusion at the beginning as to how many we're going to build by 2030, but 50 stations in the next 5 years is what we're aiming at, 50 in five. How will we do it? Sites, supply, customers, vehicles. Sites, said we have in hand. We'll show you where we're thinking of doing that in a second. Supply, we have multiple sources, even on the near continent, to make sure we've got that backup supply, whatever happens. But there's more and more coming online, and the costs are coming down. And again, I see people in the room who are looking at producing even this year. So we need to do that through collaboration. As I said, we want to work with all of you. We can't do it on our own. We'll do the bits that we're good at, and we need the rest of you. And we'll support anyone. Anyone who's producing, anyone who wants to build fueling stations, we'll work with them and make sure it happens. Where are we going to do it? Well, throughout the UK, where the hotspots are. Those under development, those where we have planning, and those where we're expected and planned. I think we could have five under development by the end of the year, but I suspect we might even have two up and running by Q4. One, of course, in Tees Valley being the first. So a lot of efforts going around there. How much does an HGV tractor unit cost? Well, diesel's only 100,000. Electric, 200,000 to 400,000 at the moment. Fuel cells, 600,000 to 800,000. That's potentially eight times the price of a diesel vehicle. This is what we need to accelerate. We need to find ways to bring that the cost down. And then you've got the internal combustion engine hydrogen, about 130,000. Again, if we focus on getting those in the market to get the market up and running, along with vehicles that are already there and have a good TCO, such as Stellantis, then we can get this market going. Unfortunately, the UK has taken back control and we're not allowing hydrogen combustion engines yet, hoping that that will change. I stole this slide from someone who's doing the internal combustion engines, Metier, so I credit Metier. I mean, they've seen that it's a zero carbon fuel and it's used in combustion engines. The EU has adopted it. The NOx emissions, 95% below diesel NOx emissions, well below the WHO limits. And if you have had blue, you won't get any emissions from NOx. Cost is the same, power density is the same, axle weights, fill time, you name it, they're all the same as diesel. Durability, reliability, service and maintenance, exactly the same. Same nozzle, plug it in, nothing changes. No one likes change, change is hard. If you can make it easy for people to switch, that's what we do, making hydrogen easy for you. And the tolerance of the internal combustion engine as well has an advantage, doesn't need to be as specific as fuel cells. So if I do a rough back of the envelope calculation for the internal combustion engines or hydrogen vehicles, at the moment it's 600 to 800,000, as you just saw. You look at McKinsey reports, Ballard, Deloitte, there's many of them. Optimistic, cost and reduction 80% over the next 10 years. Pessimistic, if there's only a low production, 60 to 65%. So if you do 10 vehicles now, that's 8 million. If you don't do 10 vehicles now and you wait till the mandate comes in 5-10 years, if you've got 100 vehicles, that's 80 million. If you invest now and the cost comes down, then by that time you could get down to 160,000 or 100,000, so 100 vehicles will be 10 million, a saving of 70 million. When fleets start realizing that the small investment now, well, quite a big investment, but will save you huge amounts later if we get the market up and running. So that efficiency that's gained through investment and starting the market, making year zero now, is huge. Not going to go through legislation, but harmonizing with the EU would certainly help and speed things up. So how can we speed it up? Well, we can. We're building the infrastructure and we're getting the supply sources. We're investing small numbers of vehicles now for big savings later. ICE is already there. Vehicles are already there, such as Stellantis, Ulemco, others. UK legislation could do with harmonizing with the EU, and LN2 is building that infrastructure where there's a market. We are safe, reliable, a lot of experience, an amazing management team. Again, we're great. So what more should I say? Those 50 and five and safe and reliable and we can deliver, I mean, those are the key aspects. That and our experienced team and experienced hands-on. But the most important, climate change is exponential and existential. That's why we're here. That's why we have to work on it now. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, for that positive and enthusiastic presentation. It's good to have some upbeat messaging, especially at the moment. Next up, we have Andrew Green from Alstom. I hope. Maybe we don't.
I was a late substitution.
Ah, okay. Apologies. Apologies.
Have you got my slides?
I don't know. Yeah. Apologies, I didn't get the memo, clearly.
Hello, everyone. A quick disclaimer before I start. I originally wasn't supposed to be speaking. I only found out yesterday I was actually presenting. So if the slides do look a little bit rough around the edges, I apologize in advance. Anyway, my name is Daniel Roberts. I'm here on behalf of Ricardo. We're a engineering and environmental consultancy. We've been going for 110 years now. We're a global company. We have 3,000 employees. We work in 23 different countries. We do a lot of good stuff here at Ricardo. If you were to summarize it in three categories, you could say we do strategic advisory consultancy, we do environmental technical consultancy, and more specific to this conference, we do mobility engineering consultancy. So I want to take a broader step away from the mobility side and sort of express the whole value chain that we cover here, specific to hydrogen at Ricardo. It's hard to fit on one slide. I appreciate this slide is a bit wordy. So if I just take you through the points, we do policy and strategy. We help ports and airports decarbonize. We look at policy landscapes. And we advise our clients based on region, based on specific policy, and based on application on how to best decarbonize. As a company, we're technology agnostic. We don't push any technology or any product onto our customers. We often pick the best technology, be it hydrogen ICE or fuel cell or alternative fuels for our customers. We also offer bespoke engineering. We have amazing engineering capabilities. We've worked on fuel cell systems. We worked on electrolyzers. We do hydrogen ICE development as well. We're also in the space of green energy hubs. We're focused on hydrogen production. We look at system concept feasibility. We also work in hydrogen valleys, deploying and developing them, and ultimately trying to match production with end user demand. We also have great industrialization capabilities. We have various product deployments in place to facilitate commercial deployment. We've done this with the likes of McLaren on their engine and Bugatti on their gearboxes. We also offer in-surface support for these products. And finally, we have great safety abilities, certification, and compliance around hydrogen specifically. We've worked in the aerospace and the marine industry, which you can imagine are very strict on safety compliances. All right. I want to talk more specifically around fuel cell systems. This is the part of the business I work in. So Ricardo have been in fuel cell systems for the best part of two decades, starting in 2016. We worked with Toyota on their Portal program. We were their chosen integration partner for that, and it's a relationship that is still ongoing today. We have a great relationship with Toyota North America. Since then, we have diversified into all sectors, really. We've diversified into aerospace, marine, heavy duty, be it truck, pickup truck, bus. And perhaps what differentiates us from most integration partners is that our capabilities in delivering bespoke multi-stack fuel cell systems. So instead of just taking a module off the shelf, and integrating it into a vehicle application. We take it at a stack level, develop a bespoke balancer plant around multiple stacks, and this results in component reduction, weight reduction, size reduction to ultimately have the most power dense module possible. And this is obviously applicable to the aerospace industry and the marine industry. Also want to stress, we are supply agnostic. We work with any module. We've worked with the likes of PowerShell, Bosch, Toyota, ECPO, developing their modules for them. Right, I want to quickly talk about one of our big projects that we've done. This was off the back of a Horizon funding call. We were part of a 12 strong consortia, with Viken being the end user. Ricardo itself was responsible for the mechanical design of the fuel cell system, and we took complete ownership of that from a blank sheet design all the way up to development and test and all the software and hardware that went along with that. So in the end, again, we developed a bespoke balance of plant around multiple stacks, created a very power dense module, and then were able to containerize multiple modules in a 40 foot container. The end result was a 3 megawatt container to be used in ship, to be used as a propulsion system for a ship. And we were able to produce a module that was power dense, well, that was the most power dense marine module ever created, world leading by 2 times. So rather than me talking too much about the module and the system, this video does do quite well in showing how the systems interact at a high level and the real, how the real world application would look. Finally, I don't want to get too technical, but I want to mention some of the great achievements we've achieved throughout this project. So Ricardo, the module has been in test for several months now, and we were able more recently to test it at full load and get data from that. And if anyone is experienced in building and prototyping of very high power fuel cell modules, it's pretty much unheard of for it to be tested first time and work first time without any components failure, without any rework of system architecture. So that is a massive achievement from Ricardo, and credit to all the engineers, the systems team, the simulation analysis team, the mechanical design team, the test team. An absolute massive achievement. And then I just want to draw your attention to a couple of the graphs, mainly the blue and gray lines showing the net power and the electrical efficiency, blue being the test measurements we had off the module and gray being the simulation measurements. As you can see, they are very closely matched, which again is testament to the great work the simulation analysis team has done, and also puts us in great stead for any future development we may do for different high power modules, as all the learning and all the simulation tools we have developed in this process has been validated through our test results. I also want to mention quickly, we have hydrogen enabled facilities down in our headquarters. This includes one ambient fuel cell test facility capable of testing capabilities up to 400 kilowatts. It also includes three climatic test facilities flexible to both hydrogen ICE development and fuel cell development. And we also have a hydrogen vehicle workshop. This is located down in Shoreham where our headquarters is. And if anyone wants to come down and see it, you're more than welcome. You can come and ask. But I think, that's all for me. Again, thank you for listening. And I think I'll be here both days. So if you have any questions around Ricardo, some of the work we do a lot of different work, not just hydrogen focused. So yeah, please just come up and ask. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. The last speaker in this session before we go to the panel discussion is Mike Timmoth. Mike's from, how do you pronounce that, Mike?
Aqua.
All right, let me just get there for timing. Super, thanks very much, everyone. So Mike Timmoth, co-founder, chief operating officer at Aqua Ocean. In addition to my role as a startup founder, I'm also a member of the UK Maritime Hydrogen Working Group. I'm also have spent the last 7 years as an innovation mentor and advisor to the UK Ministry of Defence. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we've developed and sort of then go through some of the challenges and opportunities facing hydrogen in the maritime sector. So hopefully this works. So what I've just shown you there is USV Pioneer. She is a hydrogen electric unmanned uncrewed surface vessel deploying a novel swath design. So when it comes to buzzword bingo, I think we're pretty high up the list, and I think certainly when working with the MCA, there's a few things here that make them nervous. But as I said, it provides interesting opportunities and very unique challenges as well. A little bit about her. So I don't know, it's actually really nice to stand up at a conference and being able to talk when we've built a vessel, and she is now in the water and commencing sea trials down at Turnchapel Wharf in Plymouth. But I'd spent the last 4 years basically staring at renders and a lot of people sort of saying, nice little startup doing interesting stuff. Well, I can talk a little bit more around what her use cases are, how she's deployed. She's sizable, and I think a lot of people, when they think about drones and they think about autonomous platforms, they think about sort of bathtub-sized toys. But this is a full ocean-going vessel. We've designed a vessel that is 14.2 meters by 9 meters, 25 tons, and able to take a 6.5-ton payload. What we wanted to do was have a platform that can operate in those full open ocean conditions, not just bobbing up and down and surviving, but actually thriving and operating. So the concept for USV Pioneer is all around nested robotics. The ability that 6.5 tons in the moon pool can be used to deploy other robots for a whole range of different use cases. Those could include deployment of aerial drones for wind turbine inspections. It could be to deploy ROVs and AUVs for subsurface asset integrity inspections, towed arrays, detection of things that shouldn't really be in UK territorial waters. So these are sort of a broad range of dual use technologies. And I'm going to talk a little bit about sort of how hydrogen comes into this as well. So let me just get back past the video. So I want to start off a little bit with the hydrogen hype cycle, because we're about four and a half years into this journey. I think the hydrogen sort of entire ecosystem is, in some regards, no further on from when we started this conversation. There have been a lot of learnings, a lot of challenges. I would say, you know, we're talking about working with advanced robotics. We're talking about, you know, satellite communications. We're talking about sort of a whole range of novel technologies. And hydrogen has been by far the largest and most complicated that we've been involved in. It's worth saying that this project is actually funded by the Department for Transport through the Clean Maritime Demonstration Competition. So we've got backers, which is DFT Innovate UK. There's a consortium of around about, you know, I think it's 9 partners, but about 120 UK maritime companies have either been suppliers or subcontractors on USV Pioneer's development. But we've faced real challenges, and particularly around sort of conversations. So when we kicked it off, you know, there was a lot of predictions around where the hydrogen market would be. There were predictions around cost and the idea that by 2030, hydrogen would reach parity with marine diesel as a fuel. There was a lot of predictions around investment in infrastructure, and where we stand currently as a operator who now have a vessel in the water is that none of those have quite come true, but we have seen some new opportunities coming through. There was also at the time talk around what was going to be the fuel of the future. You know, was hydrogen going to be it for the entire maritime sector? I think thankfully that one has been put to rest and to bed, which are there are very specific use cases that hydrogen is going to be very, very good at. That's not all of them. And so for our vessel, we've actually seen, particularly in the workboat code, the smaller sort of up to 24-meter workboat vessels, a really strong and compelling use case for hydrogen that probably doesn't exist in larger vessels. What we've also seen, though, is across the sector a real slowing adoption and a pivot towards other fuels. So a lot of vessels that are being produced now, and you're in the maritime sector, you're talking about a whole range of issues from naval architecture and the fact that no two ships are actually designed quite the same. So you don't get the scalability that you do with the automotive, the HGV, the aerospace sort of industry. So there are some unique challenges. You're also talking about very long build and procurement cycles, often sort of 5 to 7, 8 years. So we are seeing a decrease year on year in the adoption of hydrogen. But what we think we need is more people actually building stuff. We need more demonstrations. We need more proof that this technology is actually going to grow and be adopted. So what are the barriers that we've faced? Well, I'm going to say first and foremost, regulation. We're a heavily regulated industry, regulated here in the UK by the Maritime Coast Guard Agency. There are no rules around hydrogen. So whilst the vessel itself goes through a series of accreditations, and we work with Lloyd's Register as our class society and the MCA as the regulator. Whilst everything around the vessel design, the operation, the autonomous systems communication is all codified under the Workboat Code 3, when it comes to hydrogen, you've got to go through an RBC, a risk-based certification. So you go through this iterative approach whereby you are continuously submitting proposals, receiving feedback, submitting them. This makes it a very timely or sort of long duration, you know, sort of a never-ending process and also a very expensive one. What we're seeing at the moment is predictions that the certification of a hydrogen vessel in the UK will take a minimum of 3 years from initial engagement to the time when it will receive its certification. We're about 2.5 years through that journey, and we're hoping to get some good news in the next couple of months. Infrastructure. And there was some fantastic conversations earlier around mobile, sort of mobile, fixed. As a vessel operator, we need infrastructure in order to operate. And that has been a real sort of challenge. And there are challenges here from a health and safety perspective, from a landlord, from an insurance perspective, from a handling perspective as well. When it comes to adoption of hydrogen, what we're really seeing is that people who are investing or are looking to invest in this technology want to know that they've got easy access to molecule, but also to the refueling and the bunkering solutions as well. And we're just not seeing that at the scale that's required. Just as an indication, Joe, the UK has got about 170 major sort of ports and harbors and then about 2,700 marinas. So there is a lot of infrastructure that's going to be required if you're going to develop this at scale. Next up is cost, and cost is going to be a bit of a theme over the next sort of 5 minutes or so. Cost is absolutely critical, and what we're seeing here is, you know, any forecast that we received in 2020 about hydrogen reaching sort of parity with marine diesel has just not come true. And this is cost across not only supply of molecule, this is also cost across the regulatory side of things. You're talking about tens and tens of thousands of pounds every single vessel that has to be uniquely certified in order to take hydrogen. So cost is a real key sort of barrier. The final one is complexity. And I heard mentioned earlier of talking about Europe and where we're sort of potentially sort of falling behind or not keeping up rather. Well, I think we're seeing this from a skills perspective. We're seeing this from a knowledge perspective as well. Simply trying to attract the right talent to work in this field is proving incredibly difficult in a traditional sector like the maritime sector. What we're also seeing, though, is just complexity in terms of all of the rules and regulations. This is a massive investment of time, sort of knowledge, and you've got to have full-time teams just working on getting through the approvals side of things, let alone the engineering side. And I'm very much not the engineer in the company. We're also, and I was somewhat surprised today, I think I've heard more mentions about sustainability, net zero, greenhouse gas emissions, and climate change today than I have in the last year talking to customers and clients and end users. So the people we're talking to in all of the major offshore players, all of the major energy players, all of the major sort of logistics side of things, nobody is talking anymore around sustainability and net zero. That message really started to peter out at the end of 2022. So the people I'm talking to aren't innovation, they're not in the sustainability or the ESG team. I'm talking to people who are buying frontline capabilities, who actually require a product that gets out there and works. And we're seeing that net zero has really decreased. There is a good message on the other side of this. What we're also seeing there is part of the reason there's just not the appetite to pass costs on to the end customer consumer. And I think geopolitical world is very, very much sort of changing and continues to change. We're seeing that, you know, not only from sort of crisis and conflict in Ukraine and the Middle East, but we're also seeing this from changes of government around the world. So we're seeing a lot of things like grants and subsidies and offsets that were being talked about being massively scaled back across this sector. Cost has also become really key, and I think there's, you know, there's real sort of challenges here when it comes to customer requirements around, you know, they want reliability, they want scalability, they want to know that if they are investing for the future in this type of technology, that they're going to get a return on investment. And then finally is a massive decrease in venture capital investment that has been primarily focused on ESG. And all the trends suggest that this is going to continue to drop off. So hydrogen as a fueling solution on its own, on its own right, from a sustainability perspective, we see a declining interest. But we think hydrogen needs to reposition itself. So what we're seeing is a big shift away, sustainability moving towards capability. What is it that hydrogen and other alternative fuels, of which there are many, gives an operator, a service user, over traditional diesel? So we think this is a branding positioning that really, really needs to come through. Hydrogen is not just about net zero. Hydrogen is about capability. It's about energy security. Reducing reliance on international oil petroleum is a massive, massive top of the agenda item for government. We're sitting in an ever increasingly, you know, geopolitically uncertain, unsecure world. So fuel security, huge. And in remote locations as well, where you may not, in the event of, you know, sort of global sort of shift of requirements, you may not have access to the fuels that you require. So being able to produce it on site is huge. For us as a small workboat size autonomous platform, reliability and stability of vessel is also really key. And this is why we chose hydrogen in the first place. It wasn't to do with net zero per se, although UK government funding sort of required that. The biggest point of failure in a marine vessel is 9 out of 10 times your diesel generator, moving parts, oil and filter changes, all of those good things that break down. Now, if you've got somebody on board with a wrench and a hammer who can go down and fix it, that's great. But when you're an autonomous platform, there's nobody on board to do that. So what we start to get by moving towards a PEM fuel cell and hydrogen is increased reliability of systems. You're moving towards those visual inspections rather than those regular. That also means we can be out at sea. We can be operating for longer without having to go back into port for servicing and maintenance. Stability is also one of the most under-realized sort of assets. We want to have a huge payload. If we're putting diesel on there, we're talking about tons and tons of diesel to operate this vessel. As we burn that diesel, we've got to reballast for the change in displacement of the vessel. Fill it with hydrogen, and you know, the light sort of weight of hydrogen means that we're actually talking about hundreds of kilos rather than dozens of tons, which is a massive advantage for a vessel like ours, which is designed to be stable out in those extended sea states. When it comes to the other stuff, which is usually painted gray, there are other benefits as well. When you're looking at detectability, when you're looking at stealth, what you want to do is reduce your chemical signature, your thermal signature. So moving towards hydrogen, being able to sort of vent or sort of vent water, rather than NOx and SOx gases, rather than, you know, by operating a closed loop cooling system, being able to actually sort of reduce the sort of the thermal signature of the vessel becomes incredibly interesting as well. And then there's the acoustic benefits of being hydrogen electric. So these are both from a stealth perspective, but actually a lot of the use cases for workboats here in the UK in particular is around survey. It's around data collection, it's around deployment of systems and sonars. So if you're able to reduce the acoustic side of the vessel, you've got a real capability sort of benefit over a diesel variant. So probably just to wrap up sort of very quickly, there she is flying through the air. So as I said, 25-ton vessel, based down in Plymouth and Turnchapel Wharf. We really think there is a massive opportunity for hydrogen. We think a lot of things need to fall in the right places. I completely agree with the fact that we need day zero to be now, not in 5 years' time. We need more demonstrators. We need technology that can go out on the water, that can be proven. End customers and users want to see technology that works. They're not in the business of spending R&D dollars on something that might happen. What they want to see is people taking the pioneering approach, investing in this, showing it works, and they will follow. And as I said as well, I think there is a rebranding around the capability side, which is absolutely critical. So not sure how much time I've gone through. 1 minute over. Thank you very much.
Hello?
guests waiting this time, I think. Mike, that was a really interesting presentation, totally different, so appreciate that, thank you. I'm just curious, these vessels, how are they refueled? Are they refueled at port side or is it marina? There's quite a big difference, I think, between a port and a marina environment for hydrogen.
Yeah, so USV Pioneer, based out at Turnchapel Wharf, which is a privately owned Yacht Haven marina. We have been working with Innovate UK and the local council. We are going to be working with the supplier of gaseous hydrogen who brings it on site. We have had to do more dispersion analysis and the safety analysis than I imagine, but she is going to be refueled and bunkered from the quay site. But in order to do that, we do have to clear a fairly significant sort of safety sort of ATEX radius around the vessel. But she will be fueled, yeah, from this quay side with a third-party supplier bringing that on site.
And that's 350 bar gaseous hydrogen on board, or?
It's 175 currently, but we want to get to 350 in time. So we're sort of going through a crawl, walk, run approach when it comes to the technology.
Okay, and when it goes out, how long does it run out for?
So it's really interesting, and this is where I think the performance side of things is really telling. So if we were to run electric only, we'd get about 12 hours of endurance. If we go out with the 9 cylinders that we are planning on board the vessel, we'll get about 14 days of endurance. Comparatively, if we were to take that amount of diesel, we would get about 45 to 50 days of endurance. So there is that performance element where there is still a lag, but there are other benefits.
Okay. No, I just thought I've not really come across that before. I go back many years ago, I was involved in refueling a little barge thing that was a demo project in Bristol, but that's probably closest I've come to hydrogen on the water, so interesting stuff. Just opening up the floor to any questions from the audience. Brad?
Yeah, it's really a question for Tavisi. I don't really understand. Is that a range extender that you add to an existing electric vehicle?
Yes.
So it impacts the cargo?
No, it will be placed on the roof of the vehicles.
The roof of the vehicle?
Yes.
Okay. And have you got, and it's going to access into the traction battery to charge it?
We are going to crack it, but yes, if we are going to crack it, the warranty will be on. So the vehicle will run out of the OEM warranty, and the warranty will come on the Twisi Motors side.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Has any OEM agreed to allow you access into the traction battery?
Not yet, but if we are cracking it, but if we are ready to take the OEM warranty. So if fleet owners agree with that, so that's, yeah, we can go ahead with it.
Good luck.
Yeah, because the fleet companies themselves, they want to switch back to diesel and petrol because they are not satisfied with the battery electric. So the last expo I visited was Eurobus Expo, and they were all the fleet companies were we are done with battery electrics, we are not getting range. They were talking about the Ford Transit and e-Sprinter. They were hardly they get 180 miles, and for a commercial transportation, that's not a something they will look for, and then they have to wait for hours to charge their batteries. They are losing money over there. So they were let's go back to petrol. They were no, wait, what if we do this, do a range extender for you at a cost of a 15 grand? And they were if this is possible. And also we are exploring to do it for the retrofitting also, or completely, people, fleets who already got a diesel and petrol vehicles, which have ran out of the warranty. And so retrofitting companies have reached out to us. They are getting a good order values. So they were if we can collaborate and integrate this range extender to their system of the battery electric.
Any other questions from the audience?
Very much. It's Boris Davis from Life here. Mike, I was very intrigued by your comment about your customers not placing net zero as high as they may have done a couple of years ago. I wonder if the other members in the panel have seen that trend, and if the mission to make diesel history is being left behind by the mission to make power clean by 2030.
Andrew, do you want to go first on that? Mr. Doing, Optimistic.
Doing it in alphabetical order. It depends who you're talking to. I mean, I say there are different customers. You've got the ones that want to be at the front, the ones that are going to take the risk, the ones that see it still as the right thing to do, that they see the future as that. They're still going to be talking about that. You've got the fast followers who are watching. They're watching what, as was said, they're watching what others are doing as well, but they're watching to see if it works, ready to jump. And you've got a whole spectrum going all the way down to the person you're going to have to drag kicking and screaming away from guzzling from their diesel nozzle. But there are different customers, and it's you can't group them all into one. I do agree to a lot of extent that the same happened in 2009. There's a lot of hype around climate change and COP in Copenhagen in that year. Everyone's expecting big things. That comes and it's a cycle. And what I called it then was climate change language fatigue. I mean, we're experiencing some of that just now, but that's for various different factors. In fact, the Rocky Mountain Institute has called it the nuclear winter of funding for clean energy. And it's been a really hard time for funding for a number of reasons, but we're still seeing customers talking about net zero, and they know that that's the business thing to do, and it's the environmental thing to do.
I'll just add one perspective. I think, Mike, you mentioned 4 years that the tone has changed. I think if we go back, as you say, Andrew, much further, maybe early 2000s, you see this up and down transition around people's perception of net zero and the need to decarbonise. But I do think it's a bit sad that key fundamental need to decarbonize industry and society has kind of fallen off the agenda, and I think it's largely political. Andrew, go on, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, it's not entirely different when you're working in business and you have a big project that's long term. At the start, it's easy to get everyone enthusiastic. How do you keep them going? And that's where we're letting people down. That's where we're losing them in the narrative. And that's our job. It's our responsibility to say, why you still need to be motivated. Why? People have forgotten about the 2006 Stern report that said if you don't invest, then the cost for you is going to be much, much higher. That's even more the case now, and we have to keep reminding people and keep them on track. That's our job. And it's not just about developing the technologies, it's about keeping the narrative going in a positive way as well.
I do think it's, it's partly political, obviously, and politics is very fickle, and we've seen this change in leadership in different parts of the world. One of the things that I think is slightly concerning, I don't know if it's a really internal hydrogen view, but we have seen in the last, 18 months, a kind of some of the very large companies that I think should be taking a leadership position are stepping back or slowing down or restructuring or reducing costs. And even this week, there's been a couple, last couple of weeks, there's been a couple more. Johnson Matthey in the UK has been in the news, and Cummins in the last couple of days. So again, I don't know if that's, I don't know if the wider world takes notice of that, or if it's because you're in hydrogen, you spot these things. I think it is certainly beholden upon the hydrogen community to keep banging the drum, because we haven't really got much else we can do, I think.
Are you advocating self-help groups to come together?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. Guys, do you want to comment at all on your perspective or Ricardo's perspective?
Ricardo isn't specifically pushing hydrogen. We're environmental consultancy, so specific to the maritime sector, we're seeing a trend towards ammonia for longer distance travel. We're seeing a trend towards battery or BEV for shorter distance. And to be honest, hydrogen in the maritime sector has really slowed down. Obviously, this project that I discussed was around 2 or 3 years ago, when I think there was a bigger push towards hydrogen. I think a lot of different sectors even are taking a step back away in recent time and are less sort of inclined to invest. But I think there's different reasons doing interesting stuff. I think there needs to be the production first and foremost. I think China, from a electrolysis side, I personally have done a lot of research around. I think they are really looking at growing their production specifically for hydrogen through wind farms in Mongolia. I think it'd be similar to the trend we saw in solar, where it started as a European dominated market and then China quickly overtook. I think the same will happen in hydrogen production. I think a similar thing is happening in India. At the moment, we're talking to customers in India, large energy providers that traditionally play in the nuclear field are looking to transition early into hydrogen and trying to monopolize the hydrogen market and control the supply and demand of that. So I think it is taking place on a higher level. I do think it's just a timing issue at the moment in terms of a stalled market.
I was just going to say, I think the issue about slowing down, we see it in hydrogen, but I don't think it's just hydrogen related. I think it's, yeah.
Really, people have struggled over the last year and a half. The cost of living has gone up a huge amount. That has made people really focus on cost. And that's been a big driver because people need to live, they need to eat, they need their shelter. They can't be thinking about the luxury of climate change, even though it will probably come back to haunt them later. At the moment, they need their food, they need their income, they need their shelter. They are the key fundamentals of people's lives. When you start putting that in jeopardy, they revert back to what's going to save me money, and it's not using hydrogen. So this is for the future. This is why we have to keep this narrative going, because lots of little things are happening in climate change development, and then when it happens all at once, it'll be way too late. We'll be stuck. So we need to be working on it now. We can't lose the momentum.
Any other questions from the audience? Yeah.
Just one to add about Teesside and the development of the filling station. Is it primarily for surface transport, or is it in the airports or in the mountains for appropriation?
I mean, I'm going to quote a presentation. It's a beautiful site. It's really beautiful what we're doing up in Tees Valley, and Tees Valley is beautiful. But no, it's going to be open access. It will have 350 bar, 700 bar. So we will provide the facilities for whoever needs it. I mean, at the moment, we're not spoilt for choice of clients and customers coming through. So we will adapt. If you have a need, come and talk to us. We're ready to adapt. We're ready to get this market going.
So just on that point, Andrew, you put up 50 fueling stations in 5 years. I mean, that would be pretty good going if you can achieve that. And we heard this morning that there is demand for vehicles, for hydrogen vehicles. So what do we need to make this happen? Because with the best, looking back, we've been trying to do this for, 15, 20 years, and we've just not managed to really progress beyond those early demo sites, which were when we had 14 refueling stations in the UK, but they were funded predominantly through European funds, and those funds dried up, so the projects were wound down. They were demonstration. I always think people put them up as though, yeah, they were the end product and that, you know, they should be kept going. They were demonstration and learning projects. But even so, we haven't pushed on from that. And if you look at Europe and where they're going with the mandates around deploying refueling stations every 100 kilometres along the TEN-T network, for example, we're just not doing that here. So is that just a shout out to government to support it? Or, you know, is it you said you go and get your molecules from anyone, but do we actually have any molecules in the UK to go and get?
We do have some molecules.
Not a lot,
and not in the right places, and not enough. That is coming. I mean, that's why, I can't tell about all of them, but there are people that are producing. We've signed offtake agreements for within 2 years of some sites up to 20 tons a day, one site up to 10 tons a day. I mean, those are coming, and that's going to start to bring the costs down. We're confident that market is going to happen. We're going to do our bit and keep pushing it. In terms of your question about is it drying up, we're not really that interested in government funding. It's such a big hassle. We have to dedicate huge amounts of resources to get it. So our business model is based on developing hydrogen refueling stations, developing hydrogen delivery capabilities. if government funding is there, it's a bonus. But that's not going to stop us. It's not going to hold us back.
Yeah, it was less about government funding, more about government policy.
And I was actually quite interested in what you were saying about the UK, because there's different legal systems in Scotland and England, for example, and one of them says that everything's legal until it's made illegal, and one of them says it's illegal until you make it legal. So, you know, which one are you actually maximising and benefiting from? But in terms of policy, it can help. I put that in the presentation. You know, policy can really help drive things and get them going, but we can't afford to wait. We're not going to sit around and wait, policy or not policy. We're going to do what we think is right to address climate change and reduce carbon emissions. That's it.
So, sorry, does that mean that you're putting refueling stations in the ground without the off-takers in place? Or, I mean, how are you going to bring those two things together?
We have sites and we have options on them. If people say we've got vehicles, we'll test that site to make sure that there is a market. If there is, we'll put concrete and steel in the ground. But we're ready to go. We just need the vehicle. We know that it's a chicken and egg type question, as people call it. And we want to be ready to lay that egg or, you know, grow that chicken, whatever happens. We have to be ready. We have to get it going now. As I said, it's exponential and existential. We need to address climate change now. We need to be ready. And we are. We've got the sites in the key places. We're ready to go.
Okay. No, that's all good. We heard this morning from Brad and the other panelists that the vehicles are ready. They've got people. They haven't got stations. So... there is maybe a beer to be had.
We love Brad. He's got the vehicles. I wish everyone was like Brad. You know, bring me more Brads.
Does anybody else have? Yes.
Thank you. You heard of Lethbridge from ACAP. We're investing in hydrogen, renewable technologies in general, and infrastructure. It just seems to me that there's so many people here in this room that are either producing hydrogen, want hydrogen, or have an end need for hydrogen. But everyone's just saying, but I don't know who to talk to. What's going on? why isn't there a forum? Why isn't there a brokerage event, something like that, that just puts all of us in a room and actually discusses this and just starts making deals? Because as an ex-civil servant, policy will never happen until they can point and say, look, it's working over there. Let's do this everywhere. It will never happen. Policy will never take a punt. Never, ever.
Yeah, and I wouldn't suggest that it should do, but I think we can look to other parts of the world where policy is creating the a positive environment for faster adoption than we see in the UK. That's all the only point I would make. But as to the question of why there isn't a forum, I don't really know the answer to that. There used to be H2 Mobility, UK H2 Mobility, but I don't know if that even exists anymore.
There are different industry organisations, Yehuda. And it's which one you pick, which one are you going to spend money to join, and what's their agenda, how do they organize it. There are plenty of organizations out there, so there could be those platforms. It's getting the right people together at the right time. You know, I used to work at the World Economic Forum. That was an amazing place to bring the right people together, but you really had to target them. Them just being in that little town of Davos doesn't work. You've got to get them all in the same room at the same moment and then get them to agree. It's not an easy task. It's not as simple as put them all in the room and get them to agree.
Sorry, were you going to say?
Yeah, just on that one, I think it almost might be in some instances there's a problem of there's too many forums and they're too fragmented, too regional, there's too much competition between companies, between suppliers, between membership bodies and organizations, and actually the message just gets horribly diluted. I also think there is not enough, quite a good way to consolidate a supply chain is by going into consortiums, it is by seeking funding, and I agree, government funding is a painful exercise, it's full of bureaucracy. My take as an early stage founder is actually too much investment is going into companies like where we were 2-3 years ago, and not into the growth companies that can scale it up. We're seeing a massive dilution of a little bit of money that there is there, going to companies that, to be quite honest, just don't know what to do with it. So you see lots of great ideas that just peter out and money that just goes down the toilet. So I do think there is a need for a bigger picture, and maybe it is events like this to bring people together, more of these, to pull those consortiums together.
And you touched on a good point there. I mean, we found it easy to raise money, small amounts of money, when we were starting up. You know, the small amounts, the angel investors, the high net worths, they were very keen to put money in. They see it as a great cause. The big infrastructure companies, the banks, they are very keen to put money in, but huge tickets, so minimum of about 30 to 50 million. You know, if your market cap is, you know, is around that, you're basically selling the company if you take those tickets. So it's that in-between phase that's really hard to find the money for, and that's where we need investors such as yourself, Yehuda, to come in and bridge that gap to get us up there so we can take a bit more, grow the value, and then we can start to take the big tickets and then really grow really quickly.
Thank you. Yep.
So just in answer to the gentleman's question about a forum, the Road Haulage Association have a net zero forum which meets on a quarterly basis. There are 7,000 haulage members, 7,000 hauliers in Great Britain, and it brings together people who are needing the hydrogen, needing the net zero, and bringing together all manner of people from DFT to people on the ground. So I can only recommend that the gentleman contacts the Road Haulage Association. I sit on the panel. It's an excellent forum and brings together both people on the ground and policymakers.
Thank you for that. Is hydrogen high on the agenda there?
Hydrogen's in there. It's part of the process.
Yeah.
I mean, the Road Haulage Association are fairly neutral. I mean, Chris Ashley is the one that says each individual vehicle is unique in its power.
I didn't mean only hydrogen. I meant it was hydrogen, you know, in the mix, so to speak.
Yeah.
Excellent. Any other questions from the audience? Okay, excellent. I think we'll probably leave it there. Thank you very much for your presentations and for your interaction. I think we're next back at, I think we've got an hour break, is it?